Blog Talk Radio.
The Dove Radio. I'm your host, Michael Dove, and today we have some very special guests. The artist, the master artist, Aaron Freeland, is our guest today, and I wanted to invite his friend and the proprietor of Danette Koch Fine Arts to tell us a little bit about Aaron and who he is, and what a wonderful person he is.
That's a great introduction, Michael. Thank you so much. Of course, I have wonderful things to say about Aaron. And when I was meditating on him and his exquisite artwork today, one of the things that I have found so remarkable that really, really, really is prominent in my mind about him and my heart is that in all of the years of knowing him, he has stood out as someone with tremendous tenacity and belief in his work in spite of oftentimes incredible odds. And he continues to beautifully execute printmaking, painting, and other mediums, many times without materials that he has access to. It's been really extraordinary. So I'm an art consultant in New York City for over 25 years, and because of an early involvement with the founding members of the American Indian College Fund, I've always wanted to work with Native American artists and represent them in mainstream corporate collections, which is what I do. And it's been extraordinary because I realize that, you know, people don't have cameras, they don't have a way to get me work, they don't have a way to, it's just really been extraordinary to know Aaron because he has done everything to not only network many, many of his friends and people who he finds in addition to his work, to be of high caliber, But he's really, really stayed in contact in a way that I have found to be extraordinary. So that's a very strong point about him. His work speaks for itself, really. It's beautifully, beautifully special with soul, with heart. And a human form, a human figure seems to come alive on the page and is really rendered in ways that are completely unique to him. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have about his work, if I have the answers. But I'm a huge fan, and I'm so happy to be part of this tonight to recommend him and talk about him and pay him homage. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, that's a wonderful introduction. And what I'd like to do is Aaron and have him tell us a little bit about himself. It's a great honor to be able to have you on Dove Radio, and I'm very, very excited about the things that we'll be able to get into in this hour. Aaron, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, great. Thank you very much, Danette and Michael, for the great introduction. Also, I'd like to thank a lot of people that popular, like Andrew Bernard and his family, and Paul Critch, Danette Cook, Ann Roberts, Michael Costello, Hand Graphics, Ivor Freeman, Marilyn Pink, and other people that have helped me proceed with my journey as an artist.
Well, yes, I'm glad that you were able to thank them. And I would like to know a little bit about your journey as an artist, like how you got started and what your inspirations are.
I'm a Navajo from the Four Corners, Farmington, New Mexico. My mother's from, she's not sponsored, Arizona. And my dad was from Crown Point, New Mexico. Basically, I learned, my father passed when I was like 11. So my artistic desire came from my older brother. And my senior year in high school, I went to the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, which at the time, in the early 70s, was like the beginning of a renaissance in contemporary Native American fine art. So I was there to witness people like Fritz Scholder, R.C. Gorman, and got to know the second generation, T.C. Cannon, Earl Biz, Kevin Redstar, and other people, but also Maurice Burns, who was an artist in residence at the time, showed me some other great contemporary British painters. He got his master's in London, and so he showed me like Francis Bacon, David Hockney, Lucien Freud, R.B. Kitai, and stressed the ability to have great draftsmanship in a manner of past masters such as Degas and Picasso.
Uh-huh. Excellent. Yeah, so it sounds like your education and your influences go very, very deep. And I'd like to talk about some of these influences, especially also like your spiritual influences and some of the ideas and thoughts behind your work. On the show page, people can look at examples of your work, and there are also links to on the show page that will allow people to see examples of your work. I think that Marilyn Pink is on the line as well.
Great.
Are you there, Marilyn?
Is she there?
Are you there? Well, maybe we'll get her back. Let's see, Maggie.
I met her in 1986,
uh-huh.
And I went into her gallery to look at some Picassos.
Yes.
And her gallery read her. She shows like Marilyn Pink, Master Prince, and Drawn. So she shows work from Da Vinci to contemporary artists. It's a great honor and privilege to be associated with a woman of her stature and importance in the art world. She showed my work in New York and Paris and other cities in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like my Jewish mother.
Yes. Yes. Is she there? Can you hear? Marilyn, are you there?
I met her like when there was like a row of galleries in La Cienega, 1986. I just got through doing a show in Monterey with my brother. And it's kind of like the opposite of fine art, because as a Native American, I end up you end up doing these shows with the like trader type shows, and
yeah.
People have generalize Native American as second rate, or it's not really art, it's more like a craft. So I've been trying to break out of that mold, or you know, just show my work as an artist rather than Native American art, because to me there's only like two types of art, either it's good or bad.
Yes, exactly. And what were some of the obstacles and situations that you've had to kind of push through in order to be seen
coming from Farmington, New Mexico, which in the late 90s, Peter Jennings of the ABC News once called Farmington the most racist city in the United States.
Wow.
And it's not exactly an art mecca. There's two books written about one's called A Broken Circle, and the other one's called Monster Slayer. And you'll have to read, and this shows you the type of racism in that's prevalent around the border towns like Farmington, Gallup, or Flagstaff towards Native Americans. 8 out of 10 people incarcerated in San Juan County Jail are Native American.
Wow.
The second, McKinley County rates second in the nation for hunger.
Mm.
New Mexico is 50th in the nation in education. It dropped from number one to number two in prescription drug overdoses. Aruba County is number one in the United States for heroin overdoses.
Yeah, that's
so. It's not just me. It's many natives that have to try to overcome these obstacles.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, we end up dealing with scrupulous trader types that have no fine art education background at all.
Uh-huh.
And you know, a lot of them dealing with artifacts dug up from the grave.
Yeah.
And you know, like everything's been stolen. What hasn't been stolen from Native Americans?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's land, religion, art. And so it's a big stigma, and people have a tendency to generalize Native Americans.
Yeah.
But also, there's very few contemporary Native American artists that people on the East Coast knows. And the only Native Americans that people are familiar with on the East Coast are like Geronimo or Sitting Bull.
Oh, certainly, yeah. Popular imagery.
And,
yeah. and it can be pretty horrendous. I'm curious as to how does these social realities, how do these realities influence your art and your expression?
That's a good question. Could you ask me that again?
Yeah. How are these realities that you've reminded us of impact and influence your expression?
I think that question probably, it goes probably back to asking an artist why he or she picks up a piece of paper and put marks on it, whether, or a sculptor or anybody that has any fine art desire, because then it goes back to my culture and to back to the cave paintings or people that put their imprints on cave walls. It's a personal form of expression. And I try to hone up my draftsmanship and the rest falls naturally, recently with these recent landscapes that I've been working on. It's kind of like cracking an egg over a skillet. I can't do anything else. Maybe dishes at McDonald's or something. But, this far with my career that I can't turn back.
Yeah. Well, that is the impression that I get when I look at your art, that there is an extraordinarily deep sense of authenticity and naturalness about the expression, and that it feels that it's from a very deep place. And when I look at it, it feels like I'm looking at more than just a person, but it seems to go further into a collective.
I think also you're looking into a culture and the landscape and the beauty of New Mexico were ingrained into me, and such natural beauty that I'm privileged to be from.
Yeah. And I'm feel very privileged to have met you in New Mexico. Aboard the train.
That's right.
Yes, it was. I'd like to hear from Maggie. Maggie Fine.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Yeah.
Well, I can respond to what you were both just speaking of, Michael, when you mentioned the word authenticity. In regards to Aaron's work, that is the word that that was my first reaction. And my reaction is I am a native of New Mexico. I was born in a little town called Cañada outside of Santa Fe, and I was raised there. And I grew up among a lot of the landscape and sort of aura, if you will, that Aaron was just speaking of. New Mexico is a very powerful and specific kind of place. When I saw his work, I live in Hudson Valley now, and he was up here visiting Danette, and a friend of my father's from New Mexico told me that this Navajo artist was here, and I wanted to meet him, and so I had him over to Athens, and he had his whole suitcase full of prints with him, and my first reaction when I saw his work was, for me, it was home, because the colors that he's able to bring to life are New Mexico. I mean, the reds and the sort of Indian brush reds and the loneliness he can evoke with a lot of the one in particular, this I'm looking at right now, this man on this donkey alone in the middle of this desert, but it's a desert full of so much mystery. and that's what it is to be in New Mexico. If you grew up there, the joke is you know, it's called the land of enchantment, but it's really, we all call it the land of entrapment.
Yeah.
Because when you go there, the landscape overwhelms all humanity. You're in a world where, you know, it's so, the landscape and the skies and the openness and the sun and the sort of history, it's all right there. And to grow up in that, I think for Aaron and for myself as well, is it's there's a tendency to always to be inward and to sort of you don't lead from your mind the way you do sort of in other cultures, but you're everything, the nature's laws reign.
Yeah.
And we and in a way that's a powerful thing that the natives, I think, have tried to teach us. I mean, you're growing up around, you know, these cave dwellings with, you know, with like bandolier and these ancient glyphs all the way to, you know, it's where we created the atomic bomb. It's, you know, where they say aliens have landed. It's that, you know, you have Carlsbad Caverns and then White Sands that looks like, you know, you're in Iraq. It's a wild place. But the Navajo and specifically are regarded as one of, I mean, their mythologies and their stories have the most profound influence on our culture growing up there for all people.
Yeah.
But they are also completely objectified on the same token. And you walk around Santa Fe and it's just, you know, there's so much turquoise and so many people are showing their different paintings or their different cactuses or concho belts. And it's a scene. But Aaron's work is not like anything I have ever seen. And my family started off in Native American art back in the 30s. My grandparents started the first Native American trading post in Nevada, right outside Las Vegas in Boulder City. And they started trading Navajo blankets. And my grandfather learned how to speak Navajo in order to trade. And it was... I've grown up a lot of, I have a fascination with it and with the Native American work, the fact that my family's been so identified with it. My aunt and my cousin both run the Native American Art Appraisal Association. So they've taken on the tradition and sort of, I think we're all just completely infatuated with what this culture is and what they're trying to communicate.
Yes. I'm curious as to what, and Aaron, you can kind of chime in here as well. What are some of the essential things that you would want to like communicate to the larger society about what the real things that it can gain from the art, the wisdom, the depth of Native culture and this rich history?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You actually.
Actually, when you consider that 98% of the native population has been decimated off of the North American planet, and forced into reservations and boarding schools, and things of that nature. It's a wonder that we still have a culture left, but we're still here, and November is Native American month, so I think people should be aware of that and appreciative of Native culture.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important, because my sense is that in a real kind of way, we are talking about the soul, certainly the soul of this land, but also the soul of this country as well.
Right.
And harsh relationship with its own soul, its own nature, and its own original people. And
we've destroyed this planet. The air that we breathe is toxic. There's probably no clean rivers anymore. We pollute and disregard anything that nature has provided us. We're a disgusting example of a being. We don't deserve to live on this planet when you look at all the pollution we've done. And we've just created wars out of, you know, thin air. And there's more money put into wars and weapons of mass destruction than feeding the planet. It's not just Native American. It's everybody on this planet also.
Yeah, and I think that the universality of the message is really key. One thing I've always said is that we, and especially in this society, in this culture, we don't really handle the sacred well. It's like the sacred is typically mishandled.
We're controlled by technology. When you walk around, all you do is see people stare at their iPhones. We don't know how to communicate with each other or even talk to each other. So we're controlled by the media, which is controlled by a handful of people. We've become a brainwashed society. And one thing that, you know, I like to do with my art is just keep it original.
Uh-huh.
And not paint things of sacred nature, such as Yabaches or Kachinas or other things that mean a lot to my culture.
Yeah.
And that's basically why I like to adhere to, like, the great masters such as Matisse, who made beauty out of a simple landscape or a window scene or a figure, you know, and learn how to draw from like a model or something that has my culture in it, but also follows the line of other painters such as him. So that's who I try to emulate, even though my culture is Native American. And I think it just comes out naturally sometimes.
Certainly. And from what I see in your work and in getting to know you is that just very, very naturally you bring the sacredness to the ordinary and to the common. And that, I think, is, into my way of thinking, even the
when you look at Greg Penn, they did the same also, and Picasso, Matisse, Miró, Chagall, they all had like very nice themes to them. And then it's good that to look at such work. So I enjoy being in New York to see the great master's work in the Brooklyn Museum and other fine museum, the Smithsonian. I've sold some work to the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. Clifford, actually, the head of print and drawn, bought some pieces for their permanent collection. And I've sold work to numerous people in New York. New York is a great state, and they appreciate my work, and they love an underdog here. And they're very intelligent and appreciative of my art. So if it wasn't for the people in New York, I think my art would falter. And on the west, in the southwest, I love Santa Fe and Scottsdale, but a lot of the art has a tendency to be generalized, especially Native American art.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of the artists are to blame also because they paint themselves into a corner and they get their work gets too repetitious. And when I went to school in the early 70s, or mid-70s also, that was a time like a great renaissance. That's when T.C. Cannon, Earl Biz, Kevin Red Star, and other people that went to the Institute in 1964 came back. I was fortunate enough to be around them when they had their studios on West Alameda Street in Santa Fe. I've been printing at Hand Graphics in Santa Fe with Michael Costello, and Ron Adams founded the place in 76. That was the premier and still is the premier print shop in the Southwest. So it's a privilege to work with Michael Costello and other painters. I've gotten to know many non-Native artists, also there are Native artists, too many to name right now. And I basically try to adhere to the original form of printmaking and do monotypes, which was, I think, Pizarro or Degas started doing them in the late, whenever they did work. It was a lost art form until the 60s when San Francisco Bay Area artist Nathan Oliveira started doing them again. And Fritz Scholler and R.C. Gorman.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of great artists. Like, you know, that's the original form of printmaking. It's not G-Clay. G-Clay and offset are a reproduction of an original. But mono means one.
Yeah.
So monotype means one print, which makes each print an original.
Mm-hmm.
I paint on different size sheets of plexiglass and work in a shop such as Hand Graphics in Santa Fe with Michael Costello, who is a master printer. The print shop has to be set up for that to do the original work, which has been handed down. Like, if you go to any print shop, they know who Hand Graphics is.
Okay, excellent. Well, what I'd like you to do, maybe a little bit later, is if you would like to send me some links to, you know, some of these, you know, individuals and the information and such, I can make sure that it's also on the show page, so that people with this interview can actually follow up on some of these individuals and enhance their knowledge. You know, and enhance their, you know, their
okay.
And so we can do that. I'm looking, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at your work. It's like what you've been able to do with color, creating what seems to be like a simple, you know, some very simple landscapes, but just glancing at them, you know, the color modulation takes you in. So
I'm glad you like my work. I've been out of commission for a while, off and on, due to my mother's cancer. She passed away
a couple of years ago. So I was taking care of her and dealing with my ex-girlfriend's problems also, which I also got to total 3 vehicles in the last 15 years and fractured my neck. So I had to deal with that and that problem. And recently took myself off pain pills about 5 years ago. I thought I could medicate my problem with alcohol, which worked for like the first 2 hours, but I diagnosed myself as an alcoholic and not stopped drinking again after like 15 years of on sobriety.
Yeah. Well, I would say that you and your work clearly is a treasure. thank you. Yeah. It clearly is a treasure, and also because of the meaning of it. What you have stayed with in terms of your integrity and such, that is very rare.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I was wondering, is Danette still there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Is there
I'm listening with rapt attention here. I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was more you wanted to add to this. Like, has this made you want to think of more? Right?
One of the things that that has come up for me while listening goes back to my early introduction to Native American work.
Mm-hmm.
When I realized that at the time, you know, I was a young woman navigating my own history, my own childhood, and basically addressing for the first time skeletons in my closet that I didn't know that were there. I really didn't know they were there, you know, because we tend to go through our lives and just put our, you know, be in survival mode and
mm-hmm.
overcome what we can and just carry on and succeed and do what we need to do. And when I started to volunteer with the American Indian College Fund, I thought, wow, our country has these very kinds of skeletons that people today, so many people, are completely unaware that the genocide essentially still carries on.
Yeah.
And so I feel that it's so critical. I feel like so many of the things that we as Americans and our culture in general suffer with can definitely experience a healing and by bringing to the light, be it by beginning, you know, who was here when we got here? And it seems like a cliche and like a simple thing that we should all find very, very obvious. And yet, there's so much to be done. There's so much to be done to heal and to clear. And I have been supremely liberated in so many ways by being brave and by saying, hey, you know, this is dark and this is not pretty to look back into. But the revelation that comes from bringing things out into the light is really beautiful. And because, as you were saying, Aaron, you've chosen what I call universal subject matter, human beings, landscape. You know, you've stayed away from iconography that's specific to your culture. And yet, it's so clear that you are who you are when we look at your work.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, that you could take, you know, you could take the boy out of New Mexico, but you can't take New Mexico out of the boy. And so, you know, I think anybody could really look in. And I loved the things that Maggie was talking about. It really helped me even more deeply understand what I'm looking at when I see Aaron's work. So,
well,
so
it's funny what you were saying, Danette, about when the sort of Native American artwork first hit you. The same thing happened for me because I love the work, but I also grew up a lot around so much. You know, so many rugs and so much turquoise and like, you know, this whole sort of Disneyland world worth of what they've made of you know, a lot of this very sacred culture in Santa Fe. And I, when I went back, I was in Los Angeles and then in New York for a bit, and I ended up going back to New Mexico when I was about 27. And I was at the time became very fascinated by the story of the creation of the atomic bomb, because I was sort of fascinated by the fact that this event, this mind-blowing sort of catastrophic event sort of started here, right up from Santa Fe on this mesa on the hill. And I began to research the history, and in my own way became completely fascinated by Native American. Can you hear me?
Maggie, Marilyn has just got on the line with us as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Okay. I'll let you complete your thought, and then we'll chat with Marilyn for a few minutes as well.
Listen, I cannot chat. I'm in a doctor's office.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Next time.
Okay, next time. Nothing serious, I hope.
No, I hope not, too. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, bye-bye. Okay.
Hi.
Back to you, Maggie.
I think that what you were saying, Danette, about kind of getting to a point in your life where you sort of want to find something authentic or something sacred,
mm-hmm.
or that you're looking for something that's real, that actually has value and meaning, and when you see it, it strikes you, and that culture and that history, I actually became much more connected to when I realized what we had actually done to the Native Americans during the creation of the bomb. How, you know, we had used them; they were, you know, lived right below the mesa. This was the San Ildefonso Reservation, but a lot of the natives around New Mexico were used to mine the uranium out of the ground there in order to then send it back up to Los Alamos. And their perception of what was going on is in a different story, and they were perceiving what they were doing up there on top of that hill as a sort of it was like a mystic ritual of sorts that they felt like we were taking out the Na'i, which is in I think, Aaron, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's sort of the monster or the darkness out of the ground, which we're not supposed to be taking out, and is eating out the people's insides, and their arms were, you know, they were having lesions all over their arms, but they were perceiving this as something very bad. We are taking out the great Na'i, and there's a reversal that they believe that had taken place during that time. And I was so fascinated by that, just in terms of where we're all heading now, and this wisdom and this knowledge and this belief in balance and in beauty that we don't value or even learn about in this culture. And now I think there are, you know, different sects of people in different areas that are trying to do this sort of back to the land existence. But the knowledge, the physics, which is actually a lot of it, what Oppenheimer and Tesla and people actually derive their knowledge from, was from the natives. But this knowledge is very powerful, and it should be, honored. And Aaron is one of the most authentic and true and real artists out there. And in his sort of world, I really feel like I've seen them all. But it speaks to me the way that you'd see a cave dwelling or something, and whether it was in New Mexico or Egypt, or it's saying something that I hope we can all understand.
Yeah, exactly. I would say that as I said, when I look at Aaron's work, it certainly speaks to me in a very visceral kind of way. And I'm coming from the perspective of an African American, and I'm feeling great meaning, great significance and meaning in his work. So he has achieved a kind of universality.
Picasso, Modigliani, a lot of the early painters of the 20s and late 1800s, they all collected African masks or were influenced by indigenous cultures such as Africans. Andy Warhol collected Navajo rugs. A lot of the contemporary painters, Jackson Pollock used to be a surveyor around the Grand Canyon, and he saw these Navajos doing the sand painting on the ground, so he started doing his canvases, laying them on the ground and painting around them, because he was influenced by native cultures. But little benefit or acknowledgement is given to a lot of great, like early rug weavers, which it goes into almost contemporary work, contemporary abstract work, or modernist work. When you look at a lot of the rug weavers work. Mm-hmm. And so it's a privilege to, like, be of that, come from that type of background, and I try not to exploit. I'm not a medicine man or claim to be a medicine man. Both sides of my family had great medicine men, and my uncles are, some of them, you know, are traditional Navajo medicine men also. But that's just like asking somebody if they know a priest. You know, it's their personal belief of the type of religion, because every culture has traditional Navajo beliefs, especially Native culture. And there's like traditional Pueblo, traditional Plains, traditional Navajo. So we all have different creation stories, and I'm not an expert on my culture. I wasn't raised in a traditional Navajo hogan with somebody telling me traditional Navajo stories. My father was killed when I was 11, so I grew up in a different culture, influenced by different people, and a lot of them were, you know, influenced me in negative ways. But one thing I was able to do is keep doing my artwork. And a lot of those, my friends that I grew up with, are no longer here. And it's very sad, because there's a lot of talent amongst Native Americans that never leaves the reservation. And I've tried to help people out like that, and introduce them to people like Danette. And when I was taking care of my mother, I had to take her to different hospitals. So within a time span of 10 to 15 years, I took over between 7 and 8 tons of books and magazines, mainly to the Shiprock Public Health Hospital. My aunt, Phoebe, on my father's side, was a nurse there for over 45 years. My youngest uncle, Dr. Freeland, was director of the biggest hospital in the reservation, Fort Defiance, for over 25 years. My father was a social worker. His next two brothers were social workers. So, and that's my father's side.
Yeah.
And my mother's also has, like, numerous nieces. Before that, I had, like, other
traditional medicine men as healers. Both sides of my family have always worked for the benefit of the Navajo people.
Mm, excellent.
And other people.
Excellent. Yes. Yes, and I think that your work will be recognized even further. It feels like to me that it's for you, Aaron. It's still the beginning. That's the impression that I get.
I agree.
It's still the beginning, and let's see. So we.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes.
The other time I was in, I've had great stays and experiences here in New York, and I've been treated like a king amongst kings, and New York City, and people like Andy Bernard and Paul Critch, Bob Wilner, numerous other people, Dinette Koch, Ann Roberts. And that's New York City alone off the top of my head. I've always, you know, been very supportive of my art and whatever I did as an artist, rather than being in a place like Farmington, New Mexico, which pretty much treated me the opposite. Even now, and it's very sad being a racist type of that situation. It felt like I was in a well for a long time, and I'm just starting to get myself back out.
Wonderful to hear. This is the good fortune. It's something that you very much deserve.
I think his work really stands out actually here on the East Coast. I don't see much Native American artwork around where we are. There's Hudson's full of a lot of really cool antique stores. And in New York, the same. I mean, it's got it all, but it's hard to find what Aaron has. It's something different. In true words, I would say it's more sacred. It's a find, and I feel my husband and I feel really lucky that just to have had him here on our property here at Shakespeare on the Hudson just the last week, just here doing his work. It's felt he's just prolific. It's been amazing to watch him work.
I'd also like to wish my best to Paul Critch, who's in Sloan Kettermint in Manhattan, and my other friend, Howard Friedman, whose father just passed away here recently in New York. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. And let's see, so we have about 5 minutes left, so I just wanted to ask if there is any last thing that any of you would like to say.
Alcoholics Anonymous in West Manhattan for keeping me sober while I was there. This is like the first time I've been here sober, so it's very exhilarating to walk around Central Park into the museums. I feel like a 12-year-old. The colors very nice, and thanks to Dinette for taking me there.
I do have actually one last thing. The way that I have been privileged to meet Aaron is through Gail Bruce, who with Ann Sword Hansen is one of the two original founders of the American Indian College Fund, and she started an organization called Unreserved so that all of the Native American art, language, everything that's used in our common culture, you know, calling a car a Navajo or whatever it is that we do, so that there's a way that it is attributed back and that Natives can be compensated for their culture being used and stolen, basically, instead of it being stolen, that there could some way be a more open lines of commerce. And I'd like to, Michael, if I may, get her website to you so that people can participate in that and learn about ways that we can full circle now and start to, in our ways, whatever ways all of us can, acknowledge this incredible culture that we have come to learn so much from and continue to through artists like Aaron.
One last thing. I'm also starting to work on a project in the Catskills in an association with the Stewart House. It's going to be a mural alongside the Hudson River.
Okay.
They could contact the Stewart House in Athens or go on their website.
Okay. Well,
I can give you that information as well.
Website.
Fantastic.
Thank you, all of you. This was a very, very special privilege.
Thank you very much.
And,
I enjoyed it enormously. Thank you very much.
It was a lovely conversation.
Yes, and it's very, very rich with information. Very, very important.
I'll have more work to look at in a week or two on Danette Coke's website also. Thanks.
Okay, excellent. All right, so I want to, again, thank you. And we will leave with just a little bit of music, a piece called Taurus by Bradley J. Smith.